Accession number 30408, Major Bob Godfrey, Real 8. Now, we were talking about, where you'd moved to Selangor.
Yes.
You actually moved to... Now, is that when you? Is that actually sort of the town you moved into? Where did you move to in Selangor?
Before moving to Selangor, we came to the end of our operational tour in Johor, based in Segamat and outlying outstations.
Yeah, perhaps you ought to... Any other particular incidents you remember from there?
No. No, it was fairly sterile. There was very little activity, very little success. The battalion was only in, as far as I recall, Segamat for a matter of a few months. It was a redeployment for one reason or another. Most of our time, otherwise, in fact, all of our time other than that, was in the state of Selangor, either in the north or in the south. It was the state, of course, as I said earlier, we did achieve this fairly enviable reputation in terms of British infantry in the Malayan campaign. And a large amount of that success was due to being in the right place at the right time.
So it was when you moved to Selangor that all the activity stopped?
Oh, yes, that was always where we had most activity. And in between Segamat and Selangor, I should add that there was instituted for infantry battalion. I've made the point about not having very much leave and in 3 years being generally... In the jungle on patrol, that was to forget one or two other things, and one was that on two occasions the battalion was lifted out of operations and planted on the beautiful island of Penang for a month, rest and retraining.
Now, what was that like?
Well, that was great. It was really splendid. We were in peacetime barracks built before the war. And we had a month. It was during Christmas, and we had all sorts of Christmas festivities. We played all sorts of sports. We had lots of parades, lots of concert parties, and it was generally a very pleasant month and, fairly well deserved, I think, for the battalion. And after that, we returned to Selangor, to the southern part of Selangor.
Now, so where were you stationed in the Selangor? It's Selangor State, but whereabouts were you and your own C company?
Actually, I made an error there. After that, on that initial redeployment in Selangor, was in the central and northern part of Selangor.
So is this when you were at Kuala Langat North Swamp, or is that...?
No, that was much later.
Selangor?
Northern Selangor, where the battalion headquarters... was based in a camp named after a rubber estate called Wadyburn Camp, Scottish name.
How do you spell it? Sorry.
Wadyburn, Wadyburn. Wadyburn Camp, which was a hutted camp just to the north of Kuala Lumpur. I'm just wondering whether I spelt it correctly or not. Yes, with
what was the setup at Wadyburn Camp? What was it's in northern Selangor, is that right? Or is
it? The Wadyburn Camp was just north of Kuala Lumpur, the capital of Selangor, and we were responsible for the security in the northern part of Selangor at that time. And our C Company went to a place called Bukit Dara. Blood Hill in Malay, which we were based in an old planter's house, big old house of a rubber planter, European rubber planter's house, with tents around it, and C Company was based there. I think by this time, because the events in Korea and in Malaya had escalated. It was a time when national service had been increased from 18 months to 2 years, as I recall. The net effect of that was that each company now had three platoons instead of two. Still, the platoons were split into two sections for patrolling purposes. And we operated out of Bukit Dara and the other companies.
Did you call it Blood Hill or did you call it...
We call it Bukit Dara.
Now how do you spell that?
B-U-K-I-T, which is Hill, Bukit, Dara, D-A-R-A-H, Blood. Bukit Dara Rubber Estate.
Bukit Dara Rubber Estate. Now, what exactly was the setup like there? Was it similar to the other setup?
Yes, it was. It was entirely, yes. We were, our company commander was not close to any police commander at that stage, but we were close enough to KL, to Kuala Lumpur, where the CO was, to have the sort of police link within Kuala Lumpur, as I remember it. And we carried out the same patrolling activities. The only thing I would say was that in that area, north of Kuala Lumpur, as distinct from Johor, Sagamat, the ground was much fiercer, much hillier, more taxing to patrol. And we didn't have a great deal of success during that period, when the battalion was directly operating north of Kuala Lumpur.
Why was that? Was it just because there wasn't the success to be had? I mean, there weren't the Malayans, the terrorists.
Yeah, that's right. There weren't so many. It wasn't so active. There was a huge Chinese population area in the south of Selangor, and that's somehow where the emphasis came from their activity.
Any particular incidents you remember from up there?
Not really. I mean, I remember one. I remember one particular. Oh, two. I think my problem about what I'm telling you is that I am getting the dates slightly confused. I'm just thinking of incidents and not relating them correctly, because I've already talked about Templar and Briggs arriving.
That's later on.
But one of the important things that happened later, one of the important things at Bukit Dara was, which was to the north of KL. And quite close to the road up to the Cameron Highlands. It was north of us, the Royal West Kent, 1st Battalion of the Royal West Kent Regiment was deployed, covering the road to the Cameron Highlands, which was the major hill resort in Malaya. And it was during our stay in Bukit Dara that Sir Henry Gurney went up to the Cameron Highlands and was ambushed on the way up and was killed. That's the High Commissioner for the Federation of Malaya.
Now, what impact did that have? I mean,
The whole battalion was out searching the jungle. We were all deployed north and all round the edges, as were the Royal West Kents. I mean, it was a huge blow. I mean, as a matter of interest, you know, it sort of knocked back the action against the communist terrorist movement dramatically.
Why?
Well, morale. You know, the fact that the terrorists could actually kill your number one boss so easily was a very sharp blow to morale. And the morale did not rise again for some months until General Templar, as he was at that stage, came out to take over as High Commissioner, and he brought with him General Briggs as his Director of Operations.
Was it Templar or Briggs that made the difference, do you think? Or was it
Templar.
Now, why was Templar so important?
Well, he was a really tough soldier, admired and respected by everyone. He sacked people on the spot. He encouraged people on the spot. I still have signals sent personally to me by him congratulating me on something that had happened. He was a great leader, and he was quite ruthless. He was not always successful, but by and large he was. And he had in Harold Briggs a brilliant director of operations, whose great feat was the Briggs Plan, the relocation of the Chinese squatter population.
And this is at that point. I mean, I know we dealt with it just before, but that's we've already talked about that plan and how it would work.
Yeah.
So what you had a couple of operations, you remember?
There was one I remember there particularly, which was not particularly exciting again, but which epitomised again the life of a platoon commander in Malaya at the time. To the north of Malaya is the town of, I think it's Kuala Lipis, to the north of Kuala Lumpur, and Oster aeroplanes were used a great deal for communications in Malaya, the little Oster light aircraft. And there was a regular daily run between, I think it was, between Kuala Lumpur and Kuala Lipis. I think it was Kuala Lipis. It's immaterial for the story. And it ran, it flew every day at the same time. And the pilot used to gaze down at this dense jungle on his flight. And he was suddenly became aware that deep in the jungle, fairly deep in the jungle, it seemed to change. He had landmarks of big trees and whatever on his journey. I mean, he was obviously steering by his instruments, but gazing down vaguely at the jungle. And this particular bit of jungle seemed to change. And it changed. He watched it thereafter every day, and he realized that the undergrowth was being cleared away in this particular area. In other words, it was going to be another farming garden for the terrorists. So this was duly reported back to the police and back to Colonel Philip Morecambe and back to Major Jack Deavy and back to Bob Godfrey. Go to the airfield at HQ Malaya and fly to Kuala Lipis on the next flight with this Oster chap. See what he's looking at. See, without him deviating and giving the game away, he had to fly straight. See how to get there from the main road, which was several miles away, how to get there to find, you know, on the ground to see what was going on. So I duly flew up, and then I flew back again the next day. And I was given a couple of days briefing, and I thought I'd worked it out how to get there. And I took my platoon up this mountainous road, and we debussed and we marched into the jungle along a major ridge, being very cautious, but knowing that really there'd be very little terrorist activity in that sort of area. It was miles from anywhere. And we found, after 2 days' march, we found this this field with nobody there, all the crops growing beautifully and not a sign of the enemy. So I reported this back on the radio and was told to destroy the crops and to come on out. And we did, and they never used it again. So, of course, it was a sort of negative operation from the platoon commander's point of view, but with a positive result, I suppose. Again, classic case.
Well, you'd wasted all that time that they'd spent clearing and planting.
That's right. Yeah, that's quite right. Yeah, it was not being very helpful to them.
Any other particular incidents from Bukit Dara?
No, I think not.
And what would you do when you weren't on patrol? This applies to the other place as well. You know, the previous camp. So you'd go. You said you were 12 days on patrol. 12
days on duty.
And then what would you do in the other days?
The 2 days, you'd go straight down to Wadiban camp. Your whole platoon would go down to Wadiban camp. There was accommodation there. The strange thing about Malaya, that the safe place, the only safe place to be for British soldiers, was in the main towns. There was never, as I recall it, never a single occasion when soldiers were hurt in any way by communist terrorists in the major towns. So we would go down for our weekends, or whatever it is, our 2 days, and soldiers would go down and have meals in the cafes and so on, and the officers similarly would dine in the Colosseum restaurant or wherever it might be, and then go back and sleep and rest and relax. Maybe they'd get measured up for a suit or something. Maybe they'd be entertained by their company commander and his wife, because some of the senior ranks of our battalion had their wives in Malaya. They saw very little of them. They lived in hotels, generally, in the Kuala Lumpur area. And sometimes they would invite subalterns round for a meal. doing their rest and retraining.
So the 2 days were quite a pleasant.
Oh, very pleasant. Oh, yeah. We look forward to it immensely.
Did you have contact with the locals, the Malaysians of various sorts, or Malayans, as it were then, of various sorts? Or was it just as
I mean, I by then was already speaking bizarre Malay, fairly effectively.
Now, tell me how you'd learn that.
Because every patrol had two IBAN trackers, IBAN or C-DIAC trackers from Malaya with it. Every battalion had, 30 or 40 trackers with it.
Oh, no, you haven't mentioned it. So they'd be with you on a patrol?
They would be with you on a patrol, either one or two men. And they didn't come on every patrol, but they came on many patrols, certainly the one where we went deep into the jungle.
And what would they do, the IBAN or DIAC trackers? What was their role?
Their role was to locate enemy movement. And they were really rather good at picking up.
Would they go ahead of you, or what would they do?
They would frequently go ahead, yes. If there was any suggestion by the leading scout that there might be some human movement visible on the track, we would call the IBANs forward. I would usually have them close by me. Because I couldn't speak a word to them, the lingua franca in Malaya and Malaysia, as it became within Sarawak and Sabah included, is Malay. So the Chinese spoke Malay, the Indians spoke Malay, and the Malays spoke Malay. And we had civil liaison officers. We would have two IBANs and a CLO, civil liaison officer, with us. Usually Chinese, but sometimes Indian. And it was through them my orders were given to the DIACs, and through them that the DIACs information was reported back to me. So we had a very close relationship. And it was through that in the end, I was through the CLOs generally, that I was learning my Malay.
Now, I'll come back to that. The IBAN or DIAC, was there any difference between them, or were they as far as you were concerned?
There are two sorts of DIAC in Sarawak. There are the sea DIACs, which, just to be difficult, live up the rivers. And there are the land DIACs, which, just to be difficult, live by the coast. Yeah. It's a quirk of description.
Who are
the IBAN is another name for sea DIAC, the river men. They were men whose bodies were covered in tattoos, who had long hair, who cut their hair using the pudding bowl, as it were, across the front. They served 6 month sessions in Malaya, and then went back to Sarawak. There was a complete organisation to recruit these chaps. You couldn't stop them coming. They were longing to come.
And would they eat and drink with you, or did they have their own food?
They usually cooked my rice. Now I'm reminded of it. They cooked rice beautifully in the jungle over a fire, if we were able in a position to have fire and smoke and so on. They would eat their own food. They would be very happy to eat English rations. They had no taboos, no religious taboos. They were animists. They believed in the spirits of the jungle. I learned to become very close to them, and it figured as a very important part of my later life, as I'm about to describe to you.
Okay, but now the learning Malay, was it or Malay? Was it a difficult language to learn?
Oh no, it's a very. I mean, at the bizarre level of Malay, the sort of colloquial level, it was not difficult. I never became able to speak it in high class Malay terms, as it were.
Well, did you have a natural gift for languages? I'm asking this because of what comes up. I mean, were you good at French and German at school?
I didn't do German. I did French at school. I got a credit in school certificate. I would never have counted myself as good at it, but I suppose I have a reasonable facility. I learnt again to speak German in a bizarre way with my successive tours, which I also did in Germany.
So, not especially good, but you had a bit of an ear.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
Did you learn more Malay than most?
Than most of my fellow officers, yes. I would think so. Because
That's a bit of a sign.
Yeah, I think so, yeah. I think, well, because what happened later, having done the session in Bukit Dara to the north. We were, I was sent off because it sounds
now,
like.
Now, anything else in Bukit Dara?
Nothing else in Bukit Dara.
What then?
From there, I was sent off, and this may sound as if I'm forever on holiday. I said I had a fortnight only. But I was sent off for 2 months to Hong Kong for rest and recuperation. And I stayed with, I was posted to a gunner regiment, 45th Field Regiment Royal Artillery, based in the New Territories in Hong Kong. And I stayed with them for about 8 weeks and then flew back to Malaya. I played the part of a young officer in a gunner battery. They had just returned from Korea.
And when, so this would be what year?
This would have been early, mid, I don't know, I should think, I don't know. Oh yes, I've got it there, yeah. Take a temporary attachment to 45th Field Artillery, 1st of April 52. Ceased to be attached to 45th Field Artillery, 6th of July 52.
Two and a half months sort of thing.
Now 3 months, in fact, yeah.
Now, what do you remember of that detachment? Was that basically, was it because you particularly needed a rest, or was it a sort of rolling programme?
It was a rolling programme for a while, but it only started about then, and I think I was one of the first ones to go, because I'd by then been one of the longest serving subalterns in the battalion, the others having gone home, the earlier subalterns having been posted home.
Now, what do you remember, what happened when he got to, they were, do you know which camp they were in the New Territories?
Sekkong, S-E-K-K-O-N-G, Sekkong camp in the New Territories.
And what was that like, I mean, when he got there?
It was Nissen huts, and whatever the big Nissen huts were called, I forget now. You know, Nissen huts being a standard size, and the big huts being the same shape but different name. It was a regiment which had just returned from fairly exciting service in Korea, and were serving, I don't know how long, probably a year or 18 months in Hong Kong prior to reversion to Northwest Europe somewhere. They were very pleasant. They made me very welcome. I became a troop commander.
Now, what was that like, being a troop commander?
Because
you didn't know anything about
artillery. I didn't know anything about guns. No, I knew a bit about soldiers by then, so that was a help. I had to carry out inspections of vehicles, because they were all vehicle-mounted, of course, gunners, something rather unusual for me, and had the real pleasure of driving their great big quad vehicles, their old Morris commercial quad vehicles, the towing machine for the 25 pounders. So I did a lot of that. I was also, when we moved, I was to ride a motorcycle, which I loved. I'd been taught to ride a motorbike at Sandhurst as a cadet. I hadn't been near one since, but I was able to ride a motorbike, and we were encouraged to ride motorbikes. And on one occasion, three of us on motorcycles, BSA 500s, rode our bicycles to the top of the highest point in Hong Kong, I recall, Tai Mo Shan. Really, and so it was a great life, and it was a relaxing life. They were all relaxing, having come back from Korea, and I was relaxing because I had no distinct possibility. It was actually one of the first things that happened to me while I was there is I got a telegram from my godmother saying, "Hearty congratulations on the award of your MC." And I hadn't known anything about my military cross until that moment.
Now, you haven't mentioned that. What had you got the MC for? Was it a specific incident?
No, it was
meritorious service.
Yeah, that's right. Yep. Yeah, I mean, you're not going to be interested in reading it, but the citation is here. My platoon had done extremely well, often without me being there at all. And I should add at this stage that...
Because half of it would always be with...
Correct, with the sergeant. Yes, that's right.
But it was still your responsibility.
Yes, it was, yes. And in fact, I think it's important to bring this point in at this stage, that one of the great morale boosters in the Malayan emergency campaign was to measure the success of a battalion or a company or a platoon was in the number of enemy it killed. And the headcount thing, which earned much opprobrium for the Americans in Vietnam, was a very important aspect of the military life in Malaya.
And to judge success.
To judge success, yes. My platoon, I set out an ambush with a corporal in charge of it, Corporal Heacock, and he was responsible for, in his ambush, killing the hundreds and the 101st bandits, for which we were greatly fated. In the end, we just made, I think, 199 terrorists killed in 4 years of activity. 9 out of 10 patrols never saw an enemy. That was the essence of the campaign in Malaya.
Now, when did you get back from Hong Kong? What happened then?
I got back from Hong Kong in July 52, and I was hauled up in front of the CO, and I was told that Templer had taken a major decision, and he had said that we have been using, since 1949, we've been using these IBANs as trackers in the jungle, and we have found them very successful as trackers. Why can't we train them to be soldiers? They would be the perfect soldiers for Malayan operations. And everybody said, yes, this would be a good idea, excellent idea, good idea. Okay, then, he said, we will raise 2 platoons of IBANs and have them trained as soldiers. We will give 1 platoon to the 1st Battalion of the Suffolk Regiment and 1 platoon to the 1st Battalion, the Cameronians, who were by now in Sagamet, incidentally. The CO called me in on return from Hong Kong and explained all this to me and said, Bob, I want you to command the IBAN platoon. You've got several weeks to train them in. They arrive in a week's time. You've got accommodation. You'll be administered by a support company. And you've got to train them and make them soldiers and prove that they can be soldiers. And you've got to do it before Christmas, because we go home at Christmas.